Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. As you can imagine, this week the discussion is dominated by the midterm elections, but we also found time to talk about Brexit, the Middle East, cycling in Bologna, and swimming around Britain. I hope you enjoy. Thanks very much for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this afternoon, finally making connections. We've missed him for the past couple of weeks, and well, a lot going on. We're going to get into some of the details related to politics, as you can well imagine. But as we begin the program, since we missed him last week in the midst of the Halloween activities, I've got to ask a quick question of you, Tom. And first, good evening to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Lockwood, and good evening to you.
And the question goes to Halloween. Always a question. Is that, you know, is that recognized there in London and in the UK, in Europe? What's the situation?
It is. I don't know about the rest of Europe, but when I first came over here nearly 50 years ago, it wasn't even talked about. But now it's quite big. Not as big as the States, where you have hundreds of children wandering the streets, but it's still big. I enjoy Halloween, and I have to give you my impression, which is I sort of cover my face in face paint and bend over like Quasimodo and say, open the window, hello, little boy.
Okay, that's it for the evening. We're just going to wrap it up with that little comment from Tom Arms of Look Ahead.
The result is I get to eat all the chocolates because they ran away.
Right. Well, the other aspect of this, and it's become a big financial boon for us in the retail market, particularly in the U.S., on the issue of Halloween. I was just curious, we missed you last week in the midst of the Halloween activities. And the other question has to go with the weather there in London before we get into other events around the world. What's it like in your fair burg?
Well, at this particular moment, it's raining, but it's not been too bad this autumn. You know, temperatures in the 50s at the moment, mainly in the 50s. Sometimes they reach up to the 60s. At night, they drop down to the 40s. It is late autumn, getting on to winter. It's heavy sweater weather. It's very nice, actually. Most days, it's quite sunny.
All right. Well, we're beginning to see a little bit of fall here right now, and kind of. But you do have a fall there in the United Kingdom,
and that. No. We have an autumn.
Autumn. Okay. All right.
People don't know what fall means.
Interesting. Okay. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio, enlightening us, and we're enlightening him in the process. Tom, first question, of course, everybody is still kind of reviewing what happened yesterday, and of course, it's actually been ongoing for quite some time, early voting. And as a matter of fact, I want to ask you about that before I get into your the coverage of the elections. In the United Kingdom, and again, in European communities, do you have such things as early voting as we've had here in the States?
Yes, increasingly. I personally am opposed to early voting because what's the point of going out there and campaigning right up till polling day?
I agree.
If, say, 50% of the people have voted 3 or 4 weeks beforehand. You know, they should be voting on the issues and, you know, right, what's been said in the campaign. But, you know, that's, you know, people want to do it. And I'm barking up the wrong tree there. Yes, they have it. Very similar.
How long? A couple of weeks?
It's called postal ballots. Okay. We call them postal ballots.
Okay. But that's when you see that's an absentee ballot for us, and same situation. But
No, it's not absentee. You don't have to be abroad.
No, but you can
post it from your own home.
Okay, but you don't go to the polling. Oh, okay. We actually have polls that are open for weeks on end. Okay, early voting, and I'm curious: was there a lot of interest before we get into the conclusions of the election? Was there interest in how the polling was trending prior to the election? Was that a topic of?
Yes, it was covered in great detail. The fact that Texas, for instance, and early voting actually polled more early votes than they did in the entire previous midterm elections.
Right.
It was covered in great detail for weeks beforehand. The papers and broadcasters were doing daily midterm election reports.
Really? I mean, there's that much fascination with the political scene in the U.S. there in the United Kingdom. And I'm curious.
They saw this as possibly one of the most important elections for decades, because America is so important. And at the moment, it appears to be so divided. And this was an opportunity to, I suppose, either exacerbate those divisions or to erase them, or, as it looked like it turned out, do virtually nothing about them. It's more or less the same, isn't it?
Well, we're going to get to the analysis here in just a moment, but I want to stay with the fascination of the U.S. political environment. And I mentioned the United Kingdom, France, Germany, and we're going to get into polarization.
It's all the same. It's all the same. They're all fascinated by it.
Fascinating. I'm fascinating using that word twice here.
Your effort to crawl behind that moat called the Atlantic Ocean is not working.
Obviously not. Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Yes, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule. He is some 5 hours ahead of us. As a matter of fact, as we begin this broadcast, it is late afternoon in his fair burg of London. Tom, looking at the results of the midterm elections, what has been the analysis in the European press?
Well, there hasn't been any analysis in the press yet because, of course, we've got the time difference. And so they weren't known until at dawn today here in Europe. And so you won't really get analysis in the papers until tomorrow. You have got analysis from the commentators. You do have some analysis on websites and by the BBC and Euronews and people like that. Generally, the analysis is that there's something for everyone, basically, that Trump did well to hold on to the Senate. He did a very good job of politicking, that his rallies appear to have worked. However, the Democrats can take heart from the fact that they now have control of the House, which gives them a platform which they didn't have before. And I suppose the independents and everyone else can say this gives an opportunity for the system of checks and balances to actually work, which up to date it really hasn't.
Well, it hasn't for literally.
It hasn't for 10 years. It hasn't worked the way it's supposed to work. I mean, legislature is supposed to work as a check on the executive.
Okay. I don't want to get into an analysis of our political system per se because.
That's the European point of view.
The other aspect of this, and this I find fascinating because I'm going to go ahead and speak for the audience at large. The vast majority of us here in the United States have very little knowledge and understanding of the parliamentary aspects of Great Britain, the activities there in France, Germany, and other countries. We know that there's change in leadership, but we really have very little interest. And I say this based on just my reading and newspapers and watching the news, that we have very little interest here in the States in the intrigues of governance in all of these countries. We recognize and acknowledge the leaders, the prime ministers, the presidents, etc. But beyond that, very little knowledge.
Yes.
Is there a greater knowledge among the European community?
Yes.
About
now, I'll draw parallels for you. I mean, remember, you're 25% of the economy. You're the world's largest economy. So what happens in the U.S.?
Okay.
And you have this large nuclear arsenal. What happens in the U.S., the domestic vote in the U.S. has a much bigger impact beyond your shores than what happens in a country like Britain or France, which don't have the same size GDP or the same size military. Now, let me just draw another parallel for you. Mm-hmm. I've spent some time in Africa, and I can tell you there in Africa, they follow very closely what's happening in the U.S., but also what is happening in Europe, because they are very affected by what's happening in Europe in the same way that the Europeans are affected by what's happening in the U.S.
This is a one of the benefits of talking with you on a weekly basis, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, is to get a worldview of what we're doing. And I think that's important. And so I commend you on your observations, Tom. And I also thank you for your time this afternoon. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. This portion of the program.
My bills in the post.
Viewpoints around the world. Stay with us for more right after this commercial message.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints on the talk station, FM 107 AM 1240. As a matter of fact, to correct that, Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, will not belabor the topic of the midterms today, but I think it will be worth a discussion next week as well as you ferret out and just review all the observations and analysis that take place over the next couple of days. Let's talk about another item here, one that, quite frankly, relates to the upcoming weekend, and it's a big issue in my opinion, and I'm just curious how it's recognized there in Europe. And I'm just going to open with this comment. I would think that it has actually a lot more relevance in the European community. This coming Sunday will be Armistice Day, also known here in the States, and I wonder if this has the same name in the European community, as Veterans Day. 11/11/11, that's the 11th month, 11th day, the 11th hour, the signing of armistice on what was to be the last, unfortunately was not, Great War, that is World War I. That's coming up, 100th anniversary of the signing of that armistice this coming Sunday. How is that being seen, celebrated, recognized there in the European community, particularly the United Kingdom?
It's much bigger here. Let me just give you a couple of figures, and this is not in any way to belittle the contribution that was made by the United States.
No, but I think I know what the contribution, the numbers are.
Which was a massive contribution, and Europeans are very grateful for it.
But
37 million European lives were lost. 117,000 American lives were lost. Not just only the war itself, but because of a breakdown in society. It was one of the main reasons you had the Spanish flu immediately afterwards, in which 100 million people died around the world. It is absolutely massive here. It's called Remembrance Day. I run a scout group, and every Remembrance Day, we have a Remembrance Sunday every Sunday. And the Saturday before, we sleep over in the scout hut, and we reenact the Blitz, and we talk about it. And we hand out things which are called, we hand out poppies to represent the poppies flowers that grew in the Flanders fields in the trenches in the aftermath of the war. And that's the symbol for Remembrance Day here. We hand out poppies and we make little crosses. Now, these are 8 to 10 year olds. And 8 to 10 year olds, as you know, are loud, boisterous, obnoxious, and everything else. And yet, when we line up to plant our little poppies in the garden outside the scout hut, they know at 8 to fall completely silent. They know to stand completely still. And they, along with everyone else who's watching them, sheds a tear.
It is a major, major event worthy of recognition and remembrance. And I like that comment, Remembrance Day. And of course, we're talking about Armistice Day this Sunday, 11/11/11. And it draws close to home here, Tom. I'll just make mention of this. We have one of our own who will be returning home this Friday, a National Guardsman who was killed in Afghanistan as a result of an IED. Every time that we, and of course, Memorial Day is important here in the United States as well, but this is a particularly poignant time, and 11/11/11, 100th anniversary of Armistice Day. And
I just want to make a point, which is my nephew died in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And he was given the Bronze Star and went to someone's aid and got shot in the neck.
Wow.
And so, you know, it touches lots of lives, lots of families.
And I think
they deserve to be remembered.
They do. And I think the term Remembrance Day is very appropriate. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Tom, we'll move on to other items. And this is a particularly issue, though, a poignant issue. And I understand what you're saying related to Armistice Day. Well, let's move on to several other items. Since we're there in the United Kingdom, let's talk about Brexit. And by the way, I just saw a story earlier today, I'm catching you probably by surprise on this one, that a leaked memo may give an indication of the possible departure of the Prime Minister, Theresa May. I don't know if you've seen that, but what's the future? Go ahead.
I mean, what time is it? It could change in 5 minutes. Yeah. You know, the British Prime Minister, Harold Wilson, once said a week is a long time in politics. I think 10 minutes these days is a lifetime. Everyone is, as they've been predicting the departure of Mrs. May since she stepped inside 10 Downing Street. The problem remains Northern Ireland. The big thing is that Mrs. May seems to be trying to push something through on the sly, is the big fear.
Mm-hmm.
And especially regarding the Irish question and the border between North and South Ireland. And she's, you know, summarizing papers, and she's presenting summaries to her cabinet, and she's talking to them. And they think she's trying to hide something. And so some key cabinet ministers have asked that the full legal opinion, this is the opinion that's drawn up by the British Attorney General and Solicitor General, is published in full. It runs to 55 pages.
Wow.
So that they can study the full legal opinion rather than the Prime Minister's summary. The Democratic Unionist Party in Northern Ireland has gone one step further and demanded, if Mrs. May wants them to continue to support her, that she publishes the full opinion and releases it to the public.
This sounds to me, Tom, this sounds to me like someone who's lost credibility within her own party.
Oh, yes. Well, no one on the issue of Brexit, no one believes anyone else.
I mean, you know, you were talking about a few moments ago the issue of, and you touched on it related to U.S. politics, and that is gridlock. Well, it strikes me, and you said polarization in a country. Polarized.
Oh, I have said but that the parallels between the current divisions over President Trump and his policies are mirrored almost exactly in the U.K. by the divisions over Brexit.
So you've got a different subject.
It's just as if both societies needed something to divide over.
Well, maybe, but at the same time, it's economic here with Brexit. I'm sympathetic with that, and also I would say it has a nationalist tinge to it. But the question I have for you, we're going to go to a break here shortly, and then we're going to end other items related to politics there in the European community. But what about a deadline? Is there a deadline for Brexit for coming up with a decision?
Yes, end of March, March the 29th, 2019. We're supposed to have an agreement. We should have by middle of December. March 29th, we're supposed to withdraw. We should have an agreement by the middle of December, because it's going to take at least 3 months for it to be approved by the British Parliament, to be debated and approved by the British Parliament, as well as it has to be approved by 27 national European parliaments.
Wow.
And the European Parliament. So, you know, it's a very tight schedule.
Can it happen that quickly? I mean, that's 27.
Well,
that different...
remains to be seen.
All right. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Again, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate Tom's sleeping schedule in light of the fact that he's some 5 hours ahead of us. Stay tuned for more. We're going to get to the issues of politics in the European community here in just a moment here on the Talk Station FM 107 AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from lookaheadnews.com. In the wake of the victory in the House of Representatives, Democrats are preparing to hurl stones at President Trump. The Donald, flushed with Senate victory, has responded by setting loose a preemptive avalanche. The cheers had yet to subside when presumptive Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi announced that Democratic victory in the lower house meant the restoration of legislative oversight and the constitutional system of checks and balances. In practical terms, this means the House withholding funds for Trump's wall and immigration programs and launching corruption investigations into cabinet members. Of course, there's also the number one target, Trump and his family. This involves inquiries into sexual misconduct, obstruction of justice, violation of campaign funding laws, possible tax evasion, ethics violations, Russian collusion, and support for the Mueller investigation. Impeachment is lurking about in the political background. A Democratic majority in the House means that they could quickly pass a resolution, but it would hit the brick wall of Trump acolytes in the Senate, where a two-thirds majority is required to remove the president from the White House. Nancy Pelosi also extended the traditional olive branch in her victory press conference. Donald Trump initially responded with a corresponding show of traditional bipartisanship. It lasted, well, at the most, 5 minutes. The suspension of White House credentials for CNN reporter Jim Acosta and the firing of Attorney General Jeff Sessions ensured that the political chasm that divides America has only widened. Trump hates CNN, and with good reason. They are as biased against him as Fox News is biased for him. He wants the cable news network out of his press conferences, but the First Amendment blocks him. So the White House has jumped onto the Me Too bandwagon with the claim that Acosta inappropriately touched a female member of the White House staff while locking horns with the president during his post-election press conference. View the video. Draw your own conclusions. Sessions, well, he's another matter. Trump has been off his attorney general ever since Sessions recused himself from the Mueller investigation. The move effectively blocked Trump from firing, or at least hobbling, former FBI Director Robert Mueller's investigation to charges of Russian collusion and other alleged nefarious activities. Jeff Sessions is a far-right Southern aristocrat lawyer with a questionable history on civil rights issues. The late Senator Edward Kennedy described him as a throwback. But the Attorney General is also a firm believer in the rule of law and the role it plays in underpinning American democracy. That is why the key passage in his resignation letter read, "Most importantly, in my time as Attorney General, we have restored and upheld the rule of law, a glorious tradition that each of us has a responsibility to safeguard." The passage is a clear dig at President Trump, who's made it clear that he puts personal loyalty above loyalty to the Constitution and the law of the land, and wants to transform the Department of Justice and the law enforcement bodies that it oversees from an independent force into one controlled by himself. The man Trump has appointed to temporarily succeed Sessions is expected to comply with presidential wishes. Weightlifting ex-college football star Matthew Whitaker has already gone on record as wanting to limit the scope of the Mueller investigation. He has also suggested hamstringing the probe by starving it of funds. Whitaker is the acting Attorney General, but quite often there is nothing more permanent than the temporary. If that is the case, then Trump avoids a Senate confirmation hearing, which may encounter difficulties even with Republican control of the upper house. The Democrats, and some Republicans, have reacted with fury and threatened political war. The president responded, "They can play that game, but we can play it better. I think I'm better at that game than they are, actually. But we'll find out." And thus ended the shortest-lived bipartisanship in American history.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And again, to advise you, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. So if you're wishing to make any comment or observation, you're welcome to do so via email at viewpointsradio@hotmail.com or via Facebook at Viewpoints on the Talk Station. Tom, we chatted a moment ago about Brexit and Theresa May and the circumstances associated with the exit from the European Union. And I mentioned the word nationalism. And I've seen recently that apparently Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, has announced that she will be retiring here soon. What's the future and what impact has this whole nationalist movement had on the European community?
Well, it's a divisive factor on the European community, of course. Both Poland and Hungary have lost their voting rights because of the nationalist actions. That is, their voting rights within the European Council because of the nationalist actions they've taken contrary to the European charter and treaty which they signed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's having that effect. Of course, it led to the election of the far right, far left coalition in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
I should say on Mrs. Merkel, she's created a, for the first time, they've never done this before in Germany. This is a completely new, where someone announces that they're going to retire at a point in the future because she's made herself into a lame duck chancellor.
Right.
She says she will step down in 2021. There's a very good possibility that there might be an election before that. And if there is, she will step down at the election.
This goes back to the question we talked about earlier and the fascination I have with the fascination that the European community has with the political process in the United States. The vast majority of us here in the States are just not really savvy to the events there in the European community. How does Chancellor Merkel, how is she elected and what is the process? Is there a called election? What happens there in Germany?
It follows what's called the Westminster model. And that is that you are, well, first of all, the chancellor or prime minister has to be a member of parliament.
Okay.
And they have to command a majority of all the other members of parliament or Bundestag in the case mm-hmm. of Germany.
Right.
So that's number one. They have to be able to lead the parliament. Everything comes from parliament. There is no separation of the executive
okay.
and the legislature the way there is in the U.S. So you have an election. The person who gets the most votes becomes prime minister. They form a government. If at some stage they lose the support of parliament because people in their coalition or people in their party no longer support them, then they have to resign and you have another election.
All right. And of course, in the case of Theresa May, going back to the United Kingdom, is there a chance that she will lose the support earlier?
Yes, yes. She's on a knife edge.
Okay.
Every day she's on a knife edge. There is a revolt. There are at least 40 conservative MPs who would seriously think of stabbing her in the back.
Okay, and we're talking, these are members of parliament, and you say MPs.
Yes, they all have to be members of parliament.
Okay. All right. And by the way, when you say stabbing her in the back, we're talking figuratively, right?
Yes. Okay. I had a bit of a controversy about that recently.
I just had to bring that up. We've had numerous conversations related to weaponry. Tom Arms and I have had. All right, Tom.
A lot of knife crime here.
Okay. There is a lot of knife crime. Tom, let's move back since I brought up the issue of the UK. One other interesting item you have here. The death of the head of the British Civil Service and comparison of one role of civil service in the U.S. and Europe. What is the status here?
Now, I want to raise that for the same reason you were talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
This was big news. This was front page news. I mean, there is no equivalent in the U.S. This man was a civil servant and effectively the same or as close as possibly can be to the chief of staff. I can't remember his name. You're a general. Flynn.
Okay. Yes. All right.
The one who replaced him. But anyway, the fact is that you have a civil service here. You have a civil service in all the European countries. In the U.S., there are 4,000 political appointments to the government, to the federal government. 4,000. If there's 50 here in the UK, I'd be shocked.
Really?
Yes. Instead, you have people who join the civil service out of university, and they climb up the ranks. And the thinking behind it is that these people provide a continuity. They're more familiar with the laws and the implementation and things like that.
Okay.
The parliament, the members of parliament, become ministers. They become the heads of different cabinet. They become cabinet ministers, the heads of different departments, and they provide the political direction.
So,
which is then their policies are implemented by the civil servants.
It's bureaucracy.
The civil servants know how to implement it.
Yeah, it's an unelected bureaucracy is one of our observations here in the States, and we have that problem here as well. Tom,
yes, the Europeans would say what you have is a system of patronage, where you can get jobs. You can become an assistant secretary of state or a cabinet minister if you have $1 million. Well, to donate to the campaign or an ambassador.
Particularly an ambassadorship. Yeah, I understand. All right, I was just curious about that. You had made note of that.
So that's just two ways of looking at it.
All right, let's move on to another item with a few minutes left here. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. I want to talk about the disclosure announcement over the past 2 days of the discovery of mass graves. And I think the number I saw was 200 mass graves in the Iraq theater of the Middle East. And, of course, the assumption is, and I'm pretty accurate, I'm confident, that these are mass graves created by ISIS fighters and that this is yet another example of a war crimes event. My question to you, is there coverage of this in the European community? And is there grave concern related to what's happening in the Middle East? I want to get back to the Middle East here for a moment before we wrap it up.
Okay. Well, first of all, these figures are coming from the United Nations.
Right.
200 mass graves, between 6,000 and 12,000.
Right.
I would guess this is only the beginning of it, to be quite honest. I mean, as we know, these are pretty nasty people, no doubt about it.
No,
but I think we always have to be careful not to say because so many of the terrorists at the moment are Muslims that all Muslims are terrorists, because they aren't. But the ISIS people are pretty awful. There's a few pockets left in Iraq and Syria, but they've virtually disappeared now. They're still around in Libya. There's a few in Yemen. Now, what else is happening in the Middle East? Well, this Jamal Khashoggi affair is having an impact.
Mm.
It is having a bigger impact than people realize. Both Britain, France, and parts of the U.S. administration have said, I've started calling for a ceasefire in Yemen.
Right.
Have started questioning the supply of weapons and intelligence. As a result of this, Mohammed bin Salman has released some members of the royal family who were opposed to him. So he has given in to some pressure there. And so it is having an impact.
It is interesting that Saudi Arabia, of course, is the focus right now. But Saudi Arabia has been, if you will, I'll use the word Trump card. I love that word, Trump. Trump card in the conversations and the dealings with Iran. And I'm wondering, what impact does this have on the Iranian controversy?
Well, yeah, that's going to be very interesting because, Saudi Arabia is essentially a proxy against Iran, a regional proxy or a bulwark, whichever you prefer. And if the U.S. and Britain were to withdraw too much support, then that would weaken Mohammed bin Salman, who's taking a particularly hard line against Iran, which is exactly what the Trump administration wants him to do.
Right.
And that would then strengthen Iran's position both in Yemen and places like Lebanon and Syria.
Is the European community...
It's a very difficult situation, and it has to be handled very carefully. I always say that in diplomacy or in international relations, often the choice is not between good and bad, but between bad and worse.
Right. And of course, the real question we have, and I won't belabor this because we've discussed this and debated this issue in the past, and that is the European Union, European community's decision to work around the sanctions that are applied to Iran. And, of course, there's been additional saber rattling on the part of the Iranian government saying that this is warfare for all intents and purposes with the United States. I'm wondering, is the European community still willing to...
Yes, they see the Iran nuclear deal completely different way.
Okay.
They look at it and they say that Iran is abiding by the letter of the law, that they made a deal and they're abiding by it. And so therefore, they should be rewarded the way that we said they would be rewarded. The U.S. is looking at it and saying... right, you may be abiding by it, but there's some other things which we think should have been in there, such as supporting Hezbollah,
right,
and threatening Israel, and because we think they should have been in there, but weren't put in there by the previous administration, we are going to reimpose sanctions.
Well,
you can't go back like that.
Well, wait a second.
Expect policy to be considered credible.
Well, that's. I think you're adding some items here, Tom. I think the great concern here is that there are definite indications that they have broadened their operations and their services and their development beyond the sanctions. And it's been noted both by Israel and I would argue, and I'm not going to get into the details, but
I wouldn't believe Israel on this subject, but I would believe the International Energy Atomic Energy Agency, who says that they are abiding by the letter of the agreement.
Well, that we've debated this before. We neither of us agree on this one. We'll leave it at that. We're going to take a quick break here with Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio. I think what's important is what we're hearing from Tom, though, here as the difference between how the U.S. sees this situation in the Middle East and how the rest of the European community does. That's important. All right, Tom, we're going to take a quick break. I've got several items I want to touch on. I think they're all kind of light, if for all intents and purposes. But stay with us. I'm going to find out about free beer and ice cream. And then we've got a gentleman swimming around the British Isles. And the final one, Oxford-Cambridge gin battles. I'm curious about that. Is this the card game or is this a drinking game? We'll find out in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We move from a rather serious topic, that of course being Iran and the Middle East, to topics of lighter subjects, and particularly topics there, several ones that I'm really interested in. Free beer and ice cream for cyclists in Bologna. Yeah.
Italy.
What is this?
I like this one because I'm a cyclist. And what they've done to encourage people to get on their bikes and cycle about instead of, using cars and throwing out emissions into the atmosphere, is the Bologna Chamber of Commerce is issuing cyclists with GPSs, which they can attach to their bicycle, and little cards. And if you cycle a certain distance every month, you can get your card stamped, and they will give you, in various shops, free beer, ice cream, movie tickets, things like that.
Who's paying for this?
The local Chamber of Commerce is paying for it because it's creating business.
Wow. It's a neat idea.
You see, it's a typical discount, Come to my shop, I'll give you 10% off.
Okay, but it's requiring a GPS. Who's keeping up with all the activities that, say, Tom Arms is doing where he's riding his bicycle? I mean, somebody is watching you, Tom. Does that not give you...
That's right. Yeah, the spy in the sky.
Yeah.
Bologna Chamber of Commerce. Well, I don't mind as long as I'm getting free beer.
Okay, and then let's talk the man swimming around the British Isles.
Oh, now he was a big headline story. He really was. You know, he almost took over from Brexit. This man, Ross Edgley, is one of these super athletes. He swam 1,780 miles, 57 days, and he ate 500 bananas.
That's pretty cold water.
It's very cold. Now, he's one of these, this is not the only thing he's done. He's also run a marathon pulling a car.
His name again, we're going to have to follow this.
Ross Edgley.
Ross.
E-D-G-L-Y.
Edgley, Ross Edgley. Okay. And then finally.
He looks a bit like me. You know, he's got these tree trunks, arms and legs. Yeah. And the only difference is I've got a sort of Yosemite size waist as well.
Let's talk about the Oxford-Cambridge gin games. Gin battles?
Well, you may not realize, but there's a huge rivalry between Oxford and Cambridge. Okay. A bit like Army-Navy or Harvard-Yale. And they're always finding something to rival about, you know, which one's the best. And the latest is, who's the best at making gin? And they have their own gin labels. Now, personally, I think Cambridge is going to win.
Why?
I haven't tasted the gin, but they have managed to drop some apple juice into their gin. And the apple juice comes from apple trees descended from the tree that grew the apple that fell on the head of Sir Isaac Newton.
How do we know this? Have we done some analysis?
Oh, well, Cambridge is kept this genealogical chart of the apple tree. And it can prove that these apples were from the tree that grew the apples that fell on the head of Sir Isaac Newton. And he went, Eureka! Except he didn't say Eureka. That was Archimedes.
He just said, this is a grave, or this is a gravity. This is a grave issue, gravity issue. With gravity. I'm sorry. He said that with gravity. We'll do that. Of course, I've got to go. I wonder, is Sir Isaac Newton a alumnus of Cambridge?
He is.
Oh, okay. We are now enlightened even more. When will this battle be held?
It's in full swing. They're sitting in the pubs of Oxford and Cambridge now and London, swilling the gin.
Who are the judges, just out of curiosity?
Well, just you and me, the public.
Oh, okay. So you vote after you've had, I'm wondering.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not an actual vote, but, you know, I think it would be based on which one sells more bottles.
Okay, so the Oxford-Cambridge gin battles, and I'm curious, when will we have an announced winner?
Ooh, I don't know, maybe Christmas.
Well, we want to have...
probably the week before, because you want to know which one to buy for my Christmas.
Not hardly. I just want to make sure that we break. We have breaking news here on Viewpoints Around the World from our European editor, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And with that, Tom, we hope that you will give us a sober review of that story when it breaks.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on the Talk Station FM 107 AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of the Talk Station.